The home video era has allowed film lovers to explore the vast landscape of world cinema, and for 30 years now, the intrepid distributor Milestone Films has been championing filmmakers and films that might not otherwise be accessible. I'm Charles Horak, you're listening to On Film. Milestone Films celebrates its 30th anniversary this year, and joining me to discuss three decades of cinema advocacy and distribution, I'm happy to have Milestone Films' co-founder, Dennis Doros, on the program today. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Charles. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for calling in from New Jersey, and congratulations, 30 years, a milestone, certainly.
And it's surprising how the years have gone by.
It is. I was thinking back this morning as I was preparing for the show, what the first Milestone films I could remember seeing. And it took me way back, like 15, 16, 17, 18 years ago, to The Mystery of Picasso, Chalk the Rain God, which is this great little film filmed in Maya, in the Maya language, Grass, an early silent, I guess you would call it a documentary, but that term didn't even exist back then yet, about a Persian tribe's migration with 500,000 animals. All of these points, I didn't know it at the time that they all came from the same company, but they were all fascinating films and so diverse. And your catalog has remained diverse and fascinating ever since. Was that the plan, the curation plan from the beginning? Because it does feel like a curated collection of films.
Well, thank you, first of all, for the kind words. Yes, it's been curated. We store a lot of the films that we distribute, and that means we have to see them 30 to 100, sometimes 200 times with some of our earliest ones we've seen over and over again. And so we really have to love the films or else we're going to go crazy. So it's been important for us that they have to be real cinema, that it's just not about inclusion and diversity. They have to be great films. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the first motto of Milestone in 1990 was great films from anytime, anywhere. And that really was our idea, that we would span the entire history of cinema and look for films. Why Has Bodhidharma Left for the East was the first Korean film distributed theatrically in the United States. The Clay Bird was the first Bangladesh film distributed in the United States. So we were willing to take on films from countries and languages that were not popular.
The only criteria being that they're great films.
Yes. And then in 2007, we released Killer of Sheep. Mm-hmm. And it took 6-7 years to get out because we had to clear the music rights. But the success of it and working with Charles Burnett kind of changed our motto from great films anytime, anywhere to we like to mess with the canon. That's the polite version of our motto. And really it has been focusing on inclusion and diversity for the last 12 years because we found that it was something that nobody else was focusing on at that time.
I'm glad you mentioned canon, because there are certainly distributors, and all of our film libraries and home video libraries are filled with the greats, the acknowledged pantheon of directors and filmmakers. And not that you have stepped away from those, but all of the filmmakers that you have championed over these years, I would say, are on par with most of those directors in the pantheon. And I certainly get that sense. So I'm glad you mentioned the Charles Burnett and what you've been doing for inclusion. While you still have a lot of foreign films, you seem in the last decade at least to be really going after and exposing us to some great overlooked directors in our own midst, Americans.
Yeah, the LGBTQ directors, the women directors. Women. We've always done that. One of our earliest releases was Jane Campion's first film. Two Friends, which still is underrated and underseen. But it's partly because Criterion is an amazing company and Kino Lorber are amazing companies, and they do wonderful things with the canon and exploring areas outside the canon. But they're much bigger and they do a lot more films. So we focused on the films that people hadn't heard before.
What's amazing, though, is over those 30 years, you've somehow charted a course where you can balance your artistic mind with your economic mind, that, you know, it does you no good as a company to put out films that nobody buys. And so your advocacy in getting these out there is just the beginning of the story, that somehow you've made a successful business out of championing these films and filmmakers.
Well, success is a loose term in this case.
I know you didn't win the lottery recently and just don't care about economics.
No. We've paid for our mortgage. We paid for our college education. We're doing fine in America compared to so many others. We feel very fortunate, but we are still a two-person company working out of the basement of our house. So economics have played into it. The fact that we've developed a lifestyle that we don't need big offices and a large staff. We've accommodated our taste to fit what we can do.
Were you surprised as entrepreneurs, and I should mention you are partners with your wife, it's a husband and wife team here,
yes.
Which also makes this a unique distribution company. But were you surprised that when you curated these films, when you choose these films, that they find audiences and you've been able to make an economic go of it? Were you worried in the early days that your tastes just wouldn't resonate with enough people, that you'd be able to sell enough discs to keep your company afloat?
You know, we were young and we were in our early 30s and we had made a lot of money for our bosses. Amy was with New Yorker Films and I was with Kino International. And so we always thought we were going to make money and we just didn't realize that that was extraordinarily short-sighted. Running a film distribution company, especially for classics or films outside the mainstream, isn't the best way to make money. But our best friends are Zeitgeist Films, which is doing it for women directors and inclusive and for new films. And we've all just decided to stick together and band together and help each other. And we've been able to survive not working together with the other companies, but rooting for each other and supporting each other. And so the New York film contingent has been very kind to each other. People would be surprised at that. But there's a level of cooperation. And of course, we are supported by the journalists and by the cinemas. I mean, we've been very lucky in that way.
I was looking over your catalog the other night, just scrolling again, and just one great film after another. So many special films, though, that frankly, a lot of which I had never heard of until I saw them on one of your discs. I'm wondering, back over those 30 years, are there certain titles that just stick to you that you're especially proud of? I know they're all your babies, but are there some really special projects in there?
Killer of Sheep, obviously, was the one that helped us tremendously and justified what we were doing. I Am Cuba, obviously, was the film that put us on the map, along with Rocco and His Brothers by Visconti. I Am Cuba is the 1964 mammoth undertaking by Mikhail Kalatazov in Cuba. There's Eleanor Anton's The Man Without a World, which never got noticed or never got released. And we're restoring it now into 4K and with a brand new score. It's a 1992 silent Yiddish film shot in San Diego, looking to be a 1927 silent film shot in Poland. So it's crazy enough, but we're really proud of that. And working with the great artist, Eleanor Anton, it's her one feature film. So we're going to give it another shot to succeed.
It occurs to me that these films, often new to me, and I'm sure to a lot of people when they come across them, that Milestone has not only built a successful model for channeling these films out into the world, but because they're coming into our homes and people are experiencing them probably mostly for the first time on your disc, it occurs to me that Milestone, part of your legacy is that you have also impacted enormously our cinema culture. Do you ever think about that? Do you feel it?
Working out of our basement, we don't get much feedback. But when we get emails from young students, from filmmakers, when we see that, oh, what was the latest homage? The marvelous Mrs. Maisel had an I Am Cuba scene directly from
yes,
the film.
I remember.
And the cinematographer crediting it. That makes us proud. That makes it seem worthwhile.
You're making a difference.
I hope so.
In the honors that you're receiving this year as part of your 30th, a rare one, which is TCM next week on Tuesday, is celebrating your anniversary with a whole program with several films from your catalog. And I presume some introductions by yourself and AB. And tell us a little bit about what's going to happen next Tuesday on TCM, Turner Classic Movies.
I'll start with the Milestone titles because there's another anniversary I wanted to talk about. We are having the world television premiere of Not Film by Ross Lippman, which is the world television premiere of a two-hour documentary about the making of film by Samuel Beckett starring Buster Keaton. And it's how the world of literature and silent film and Boris Kaufman, the great Russian cameraman, the man with the movie camera, how Barney Rosset of Grove Street Press, how this weird collaboration between all these people, including Samuel Beckett, created this 20-minute silent film that is such an oddity that it's an amazing documentary about the making of this film. Then we go into No Maps on My Taps, which is a documentary about the great African-American tap dancers, Chuck Green and Bunny Griggs and Sandman Sims. And it's just heartwarming and marvelous. And the talent is just incredible. And then after that is The Exiles by Kent McKenzie, a docudrama shot in late 1950s in a lost area of Los Angeles called Bunker Hill, which not only doesn't exist anymore, it doesn't exist geographically. City of Los Angeles leveled the hill that made it so pronounced. And it's about the Native Americans living in that area in the late 50s by government relocation. And then there's my favorite part of the night is the 30th anniversary of the Association of Moving Image Archivists has a yearly event called Archival Screening Night, which has always been closed to the public. You're allowed from any archive in the world 6 minutes to show what you have in your archive, and it can be wonderful or strange or hilarious. And it's a compilation of things that year that archivists just love and has to have shown. And we've compiled one for the public for the first time ever. And TCM is playing that for the 30th anniversary of AMIA. And that really is what I'm proudest of, that we are getting this on Turner Classic Movies and showing the world that restorations are not just about Star Wars or Gone with the Wind, that 6 minute fragments of films or short films from 1913 or anything, it can be wonderful. And it's a compilation that I think people will just love.
Since you're talking about AMIA, I should mention you are the current president of the Association of Moving Image Archivists, and AMIA was to have its 2020 conference right here in El Paso. Can you give us an update? You're still coming to El Paso, I gather, but just not this year?
It is not going to be in November because we want to keep everybody, including the city of El Paso, safe. We don't want to be bringing in 1,000 people from around the world to share in this social experiment we call the COVID-19. So we are planning it in February if there is a vaccine and if it's safe. And if not, we'll have it next year, sometime in El Paso. We promise we're going to have it. And it's going to have a public exhibition at the Plaza Theater. Yeah. Which is just one of the great theaters in this country, one of the national treasures.
I love that we can share all of these treasures that these archivists bring to the conference every year with El Pasoans.
And a shout out to Brooke Underwood and the city of El Paso, because they have been extraordinarily hardworking and understanding in bringing us to El Paso and making sure that we're keeping the city safe and our members safe. So I wanted to thank them too.
Well, and I thank you for making time for us and connecting from so far away. Congratulations on another milestone, 30 years of business for Milestone Films. And, you know, Dennis, on a personal note, I also want to thank you for, you don't know this, but you were one of the first people to say yes to me many, many years ago when I first started doing this show. You were one of my first guests on this show. I think we talked about your release of Chang and Grass, the early
yes.
silent films. And it's amazing where our paths have led us, and it's been fun watching you and Amy build your business and just continue to be amazing advocates and evangelists for great film. So,
well, and personally, you have been a great friend for all these years and a great supporter of Milestone, and what you have done for El Paso and for cinema culture has been wonderful. So I'm tremendously impressed that I know Charles Horvath.
Stop. Well, thank you, my friend. Stay safe.
You.
Be good. I've been discussing the 30th anniversary of Milestone Films with its co-founder, Dennis Doros. Milestone's carefully curated catalog of important silent avant-garde foreign and independent films continues to challenge the cinema canon and champion the work of both underseen filmmakers and cinema masters. Milestone Films will be celebrated this Tuesday evening on TCM with screenings and discussions of several films from their catalog. The program will run from 6 p.m. to midnight Tuesday evening, El Paso time, on TCM. On Film was edited by Seth Van Meter. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.